Taking it to the streets, everyone. Welcome back, everybody, to Third Stream View. I am your not-so-humble host, PK, and this show is pre-recorded from Monday evening, September 5th. I have an interesting guest back coming back tonight. We spoke to him, I think it was last month. He's been a little trouble lately, but nothing that he deserves. And before I go on, I'd like to thank BBSRadio.com for promoting free speech and cutting through the corporate Zionist control of the national media, the statist opinion cartel, status quo media. I recently saw some clips, I think it was on YouTube, there's some compilations of Bernanke, our illustrious reserve chairman from like 2004. These clips are from a collage of like 2004, 2005, although he didn't take the reins until, I believe, 2006. But you can hear him telling us how sound he thinks the market pretty much is, and yes, housing prices are rising a bit, but it's nothing to be worried about. He doesn't foresee this. He doesn't foresee that. It's laughable to see these useless bureaucrats, and he still doesn't get it about the Great Depression. Supposedly, Bernanke is a student of the Great Depression. Yeah, the Milton Friedman-type depression explanation, which does blame the Fed, but not as thoroughly, and it says if the Fed only created more money. But the Austrian School of Economics, we speak a whole different version of what happened, and it started in the 20s. Yeah, they were the roaring 20s, all right, because the Fed was roaring, creating lower interest rates and expanding the money supply. So anyway, tonight's guest is my friend Mark from Central Florida, who was recently arrested for handing out fully informed jury flyers by the courthouse to all passers-by, and all prospective jurors. He wasn't singling out any jurors. He wasn't tampering with anybody in particular. It was purely objective. And so he gets arrested for that. This was, I believe, was it June or July he gets arrested. And then he had to come back for his court date, and then they put him in jail for a few days. They gave him a 141-day sentence. The same idiot judge, Belvin Perry, who presided over Casey Anthony's case, and he still hasn't figured out what if he should have her do some, house arrest or something like that for writing bad checks or some other stuff she's been into. So, you know, the hardened criminals he has a problem with, but people who are not criminals, who are exercising their constitutional rights, have to pay the price for his idiocy. I think he should be permanently disbarred, and he should do 141 days in jail. That's my opinion, because this friend of mine, Mark, he also was honorably discharged from 6 years of service in the Army National Guard Reserves. So if anybody's defended our rights for free speech, it's our veterans. I mean, that's what they're part of their purpose of their service to our country, the Bill of Rights, the Constitution. And so that's payback they get. So I applaud Mark's efforts, and we're all behind him. I was battling some people on Facebook about his predicament, and as I would expect, the lawyers who were on there, they're not sympathetic to fully informed juries, which means that the jury can vote its conscience. It can nullify the law. And we are never referring to cases of murder, rape, arson, armed robbery, kidnapping. We are primarily concerned with victimless crime laws and the stupidity of the victimless crime laws, filling up our prisons with nonviolent so-called drug offenders. In fact, my mind is already made up. If I ever do jury duty and it's for a nonviolent drug offender, quote-unquote offender, prostitution, taxes, gambling, they're not guilty. When I come in, they're already not guilty, and I'll try to convince the jury of that. That's my take on it, and I'm totally for fully informed juries. And anyone who continues to spread the information, to hand out leaflets to all passerbyers, nobody's contacting jury members and telling them how to vote or what to do. It's purely objective. It's free speech. It's free press. I think Mark is with us. Mark, are you out there, sir?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes. Did you enjoy my little rant there?
I'm here. I'm fine. I can hear you okay.
Did you enjoy my little rant there?
Oh, yeah, you had most of it right. Yeah, that's
Thank
about
you.
It.
Mm-hmm. Would you, before we continue, would you like some tea or coffee?
Yeah, it's pretty funny. You got to shove it through the phone.
Why does everybody laugh when I say that? Yes, sir, it's self-service. So, Mark, welcome back to Third Stream View, my friend. I'm not boasting here, but I was proud to donate to your situation, and I'm good for another donation because you're doing the right thing, and I appreciate the sacrifices you've made and the efforts you've made, and I hate to see you persecuted. It's a total bogus bunch of BS.
Yeah, it is. And really what jury, if I can elaborate on that, is jury nullification is like the fourth branch of the government. I mean, you have the judicial, the executive, and the administrative branch, but the fourth branch is actually the people themselves, and they have the right to nullify a law if it's a bad law. And just to elaborate on what you're saying, they also can vote with their conscience and their intuition. So the notoriety that I'm getting is has a lot to do with the Chief Judge Belden Perry, because he just happened to be the judge on the Casey Anthony trial, and everybody in the world has heard about that one.
Right, right. Yeah.
So he could. I mean, the jury could actually vote their conscience there and say, even though the evidence doesn't permit, they could actually they could have voted her guilty. I'm not sure if it would have been right to vote her of a murder number one, but it is possible for the jury to do that.
Right. I was always curious of, you know, whether or not the baby was intentionally killed. I just want to know how and who put the baby in the woods, you know? I mean, that's the smoking gun there. As I said earlier, I would never use a jury nullification for murder cases or, you know, arson, rape, or, you know, kidnapping. However, if I thought somebody was not guilty of murder or kidnapping or arson, I would vote not guilty.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, jury nullification, you're correct, mostly goes along with victimless crimes and, you know,
sure.
Things like pornography and let's see, it would also be like
drug possession.
Yeah, drug possession especially, because 40% of everybody in federal prisons are nonviolent small-time drug users. So and we can't really afford to keep them in prison. We really don't have the resources, and nonviolent people I don't think should be in prison, period.
Nor should they be in there in the first place. And by the way, the host of this show that you're speaking to right now is a drug user. I use the sacred herb, otherwise known as ganja or marijuana. Perhaps I am a criminal.
Sure.
You are speaking with a criminal right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
So what's, explain to us what's, what happened recently, and what's the status of what's going on here now, please?
Okay, well, on July 26th, I had my day in court with Judge Perry, and both of the administrative orders he claims that I violated, issued by him, Administrative Order 10-11-3 and 10-11-7, 10-11-3 had to do with handing out feature flyers or anything, that is, to any juror, holding a sign or actually talking to a juror. Now, the people that I talk to, they aren't jurors yet. They're just the common people walking in the courthouse and the summoned jurors. But I don't differentiate. If I go to the trouble down there to hand out these flyers, I'm handing them out to everybody I possibly can.
Right. One size
fits
all.
You know, it's freedom of speech. I don't care who you are. You should be able to hand out anything you want. So,
that's true.
I go to court, and the judge, well, he's the arresting judge, and then he did hire a state attorney, a guy named Bill Ross, to prosecute. And then the judge is also the jury, and he's also the executioner here. So he's all four or three of the entities of a fair trial. And if anybody's listening that didn't hear me before, is in one of the hearings before I went to trial on the 26th, I asked the judge to recuse himself, And I also asked him that I wanted a trial by jury because it's a felony. And in our Constitution, it says any felony, you get to be tried by a jury of your peers. Well, that doesn't seem to happen when you have when it's contempt of court. Even though I wasn't in his court, I was outside on the sidewalk, but it was called external contempt of court is my charge. And then I violated two of his orders. And in those administrative orders, it says on the very tail end of them that anybody that violates them will be held in civil contempt of court, which is just a misdemeanor. I mean, you still could get up to 30 days on a misdemeanor, but usually they don't do that if it's nonviolent and it's violent be a felony. But the first time they don't really do that. So he went ahead and nailed me for criminal contempt of court, external contempt of court. So my penalties for violating both of those orders, the handing out the flyers, 03 administrative order, and then 07 says you can't have anything to do with free speech unless you're in the free speech zones, which are two rectangles way out about 250 feet out in front of the courthouse, closer to the highway than it is to the courthouse doors. So since I violated both of those, he gave me 151 days in jail for one order and 141 days for the other order to be served congruently at the same time. And I spent 4 days in jail, and now I'm out on appeal, and this appeal is likely to go right up to the Supreme Court. So we'll be there a while. I mean, I'll be out on bond here a while until this gets settled, but if both of them don't go in my favor, I'm right back in 33rd Street Jail.
Ouch. Is this the Florida Supreme Court or the federal? It's national.
This is one of these things that would go right up to the federal Supreme Court.
Wow.
Yeah, they like to hear things like this because it's a direct challenge to the Constitution.
Those are the ones that get up there to the Supreme Court.
If it's turned down by the other courts, which most likely it will be, it shouldn't be, but most likely it will be because they're too friendly with the local judges and things.
Of course, they're all still a bunch of dictators in black robes. You know, they represent the state. I had some idiotic lawyer when I was debating on Facebook about your situation. I said, you know, the jury should be the most important entity in the court because the jury represents the people and the judge, you know, and the lawyer, you know, they represent the state. And he said that the judge doesn't represent the state. Well, you know, who does, you know? And most lawyers are opposed, as far as I can guess and see, and other lawyers I've spoken to, even before your situation, they tend to oppose jury nullification. You know, it kind of cuts them out of the loop a little bit.
Yeah, there's a reason for that. Anyone that works for the state, they oppose jury nullification, and so do the judges, because usually the prosecuting attorneys for the state, they're elevated by how many convictions they get. So therefore, they don't ever, and then the other part of that is if they don't get a conviction, then their superior would say, or whoever evaluates them, well, you shouldn't brought it to court if you couldn't get a conviction. Now, let's stay with that one a little bit. So that's one of the reasons we have so many minority groups. The biggest group is the black teenager, which has the highest unemployment rate. In the country, they're the ones that end up going to jail for having a joint on them, and then they end up getting 3 years. So it's real easy to get a conviction because they don't have the resources to hire a lawyer. They got to go in with a public defender. A public defender's handling 170 cases at one time, so he doesn't have any time to research or plead a case. The only thing he do is just try to give a plea bargain. That's the only thing they can do. Whereas you have the big-time drug users, the millionaires, well, they don't ever go to court because they can afford any lawyer they want. And then they have enough assets that they can usually barter themselves out of the crime. I mean, they'll give them a Ferrari and maybe a yacht, a couple of apartment buildings, so they don't end up going to jail, just the ones with no money.
Right, right. Are you still out there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah,
everything.
It's thundering and storming out here, so I hope I don't lose the power or anything. So, yeah, I hear where you're coming from. And the situation is not for the poor black kid or the rich other guy. It's to get rid of the stupid laws in the first place, because so many laws make criminals. They create more problems, more crime. And, you know, the state feeds on that. And these damn prosecutors, you know, they're really, you know, they really want red meat. They want to, like you said, get a conviction. And and they could just as easily – here's the damn thing about lawyers, about damn lawyers. They could easily – just as easily represent either side with cocktails at six. Because what does a lawyer have, ladies and gentlemen? What do lawyers have? Do they have a large inventory of equipment and machinery in a factory or a plant? Do they have a large fleet of cars and trucks? No. They have their law office either by themselves or with a partner or two or three. They've got some secretaries, and they've got their library. And yet they can take at least a third when they get a case. You know, probably over half the politicians and bureaucrats are lawyers. So they tweak the system to suit themselves, and they've complicated it so much for everybody else. And it's just a damn self-serving, expensive, monopolistic thing that they have on us. We need attorneys. We need lawyers. Obviously, we need objectively defined law, but we don't need them churning out endless laws, endless this, endless that, over-regulating us, over-taxing us. Plus the fact that I've always thought that these damn courts use so-called contempt of court much too frequently and very ill-applied. And I think the people who are in contempt are the damn judges and lawyers.
Well, actually, the judges, they're the ones that are doing the jury tampering, because ever since I started handing out these flyers way back in September, what happened is after the lawyers pick the jury, then the judge goes up to the jury and says, okay, if it's illegal to eat a ham sandwich and the defendant ate a ham sandwich, are you going to find him innocent or guilty? Well, I think anybody ought to be able to eat a ham sandwich anywhere they feel like it. But what he's trying to do is get people to follow the law the way he explains it and not acquit anybody. They like convictions because convictions in the prisons are a real big business.
But those weren't even laws. They were his, like, judicial decrees. I think that makes them even more easy to challenge them.
Yeah, but it makes it harder because the way the law is written, and I didn't know this at the time, I know it now, is the judge, he doesn't even have to follow the Constitution. He can just go ahead and get somebody for contempt of court and issue a non-constitutional order, which definitely the free speech orders that he administered are, and you can't fight him saying it's against the Constitution. You can only fight him saying, no, it doesn't apply to me, or I didn't think I was part of this administrative order. That's it. You've got no other way to do it. Now, you can do it, I found out. This is all hindsight. You can do it after he puts out the administrative order. Then you can go ahead and try to challenge it, but before you're arrested. But then you got to hire a lawyer to do that, so it complicates things a little bit more.
Oh, of course, you know. You think some damn lawyers would do it pro bono, but again, they serve the state, and they're all tied in, so they want to keep it overregulated and complicated for the regular people. But they want you to pay your taxes in the meantime so you can pay their damn salaries, yet then you have to spend money to hire an attorney to undo what the other attorneys have done, or to try to undo what the other lawyers have done.
Yeah.
Reminds me of other, I think it's Shakespeare's Henry V. I think it's Henry V where there's a line in there that says, first we must kill all the lawyers. So
yeah.
It's interesting that they had that outlook even back then. You know, the difference between a doctor and a lawyer is a doctor can help you.
Yeah.
But lawyers follow doctors. So where there's a large number of doctors, you'll also find larger numbers of lawyers.
Yeah. But I think the lawyer is definitely the issue. There's too many of them, and And there's just too much litigation our government keeps making, which is another perfect example why we have to start minimizing the whole judicial system. We have just too many laws and too many people in jail.
Definitely.
So to solve some of that, really, it's got to start up at the top. You know, it has to start with the legislative branch quit making so many laws and quit incarcerating people for nonviolent things. I mean, if anything else, we just don't have the money. So you're right. The lawyers are definitely, they're profit-driven, but the more laws we make, we ought to call most of these laws the Lawyer Full Employment Acts.
Well, of course, and you said they're profit-driven, yeah. They're profit-driven because they have a monopoly. It's forced on us. Their profits are not so much derived in a free market because behind the scenes, they're the ones making the laws. I mean, that judge, you know, the judges are lawyers. I mean, quite often, you know, lawyers are just stooges for the politicians and the they are politicians, lawyers, but the cops are stooges for lawyers and politicians because they're just following, you know, carrying out their decrees.
Yeah, true.
So where this going? How are you going to argue this case with your attorney? What do you, you know, how is it shaping up?
Well, the next turn of events it's $5,000 to file the first appeal. Then as the way this thing works itself up to the Supreme Court, well, then it is it'll end up being about $10,000 plus incidentals. So I'm putting together my legal defense fund right now, and I really need contributions any way I can get them. And thank you for helping, PJ.
My pleasure.
But we got to get $1,500 just to get the ball rolling, and then by the end of another 40 days, we have to have the total of $5,000. Now, and things, but you know, I got to keep the my lawyer paid.
Would you care to give that information now if you have it, or your contact information of where to send a donation?
My name is Mark, M-A-R-K, Schmitter, S-C-H-M-I-D-T-E-R. You can contact me on Facebook, which is the easiest way. And right now, as I said, I'm putting together a website and all that. It just takes time to do it because most everybody that's doing it, they're just doing it in their spare time here. In Orlando, just other patriots are just donating their time and everything.
Right.
Because they really understand that it isn't really just me. I mean, I'm the one that took the bullet. But what we're talking here is the First Amendment of our Constitution to save our country. Because once you lose the First Amendment is the backbone to the Constitution. So at least people understand that enough, and people are donating, you know, $50 here, $10, $100. One was $2,500 that covered the lawyer in the first place. So
wow.
We've got little bits of money coming in, but we got to stay on top of it and stay in the news and trying to get people to understand how really important this is.
What was the jail experience like? How were you treated there?
I would have to say, the whole time I was there, mostly because I'm 64 years old, I think, is I was treated with respect. And, I mean, anytime you move anywhere, they handcuff you. And they would always say, are they too tight? You know, they call me sir. They treat me a whole lot different than most of the other ones that are in there. And then there's also, like, four different branches of or four different types of people that are incarcerated. And I had the green tag on me, which is the least dangerous of all of them. So,
so do they stick you with the other hardened ones too?
Well, no, they really didn't, because they were afraid that they would relate me to the Casey Anthony case, and they might try to harm me, thinking, because everybody down there thinks that she should have been found guilty.
Yeah.
So, like everybody else in the world. So they were worried that they might do me harm, so they put me in what they saw PC, which is like private or preferred containment. So basically, they kind of put me in solitary. And to me, at least for 4 days, it wasn't that bad. Because as long as I had a book to read, I was okay. I mean, I didn't enjoy being there, of course. And the food was below institutional food. I mean, absolutely no seasoning whatsoever. Two pieces of white bread, a couple pieces of bologna, and a piece of cheese on it, and some sort of PKW stuff, some clear liquid in a box container. So I was losing weight like crazy. At least it helped me get my diet back in gear.
Wow, it's too bad it had to be done that way. And so did you have, I mean, were you in a cell with other inmates?
No, I was in a cell with only two bunks. It was about probably 6 feet by maybe 17 or 18 feet with two bunks, but I'm the only one in it. And they only opened that door for me the first week is a half hour per day. And then you come out and take a shower and use the phone if you can figure out how to do it. And then the next week they lengthen it to 1 hour a day out. That's it. Otherwise, you're stuck in the jail cell.
I noticed that on some of these jail shows, I was surprised that inmates are kept in, like, what, 23 hours? I thought they had more yard time.
No. Now, you see, with somebody like me, because I'm the least dangerous of anybody there, if it wasn't for me being a PC type of inmate, they would have me out, you know, picking up trash around the yard and doing all that type of stuff. They'd let me out a whole lot. But they were worried about my well-being. So that's one reason that I was kind of in solitary.
Did you have any visitors? Did you have any visitors?
No, I'm not allowed to have visitors for a while. It's a number of weeks before you're allowed to have visitors.
Wow.
Now, I did have a couple of news stations came down there, and I signed a release, and then they would escort me out there so they could interview me live. I had two or three of them, I think. And you know, that was a breath of fresh air. But, I mean, at least for the first few days, it didn't drive me nuts that I didn't have that much freedom. But, of course, you know, if I'm going to be in there for 5 months, everything's going to be changing a whole lot. I am going to be going nuts.
That's a real shame. Plus, just looking at the expense of it all, to house a former vet, honorably discharged vet, exercising his constitutional rights, hadn't harmed anyone. And government prices are inflated for everything. So, I mean, just the cost of incarcerating you for 5 months is ridiculous. What a waste. And it's, taking
it's
that chunk out of your life.
$76 a day? Yeah, that's how much it costs to incarcerate somebody. Of course, they're leaving out the part that when I'm on the outside, I'm generating taxes for the country because I'm working and buying and selling stuff. So it's really a double whammy.
Yeah. I mean, now, this would just be a jail. This is not like a federal prison because those are more expensive, aren't they?
I think they are. I haven't really studied them that much. But the other problem is now I'm a convicted felon. So technically, as I understand it, I can't vote or own a gun. And since I'm self-employed, that's good because most people, if you're a felon, lots of people will fire you. Now, also, I'm a roofing contractor here in Orlando, but I don't hold the license. My son does. And if I held the license, if you're a convicted felon, you got to turn in your contractor's license.
Are you already convicted?
Yes, sir. I was convicted on the 26th.
Oh, boy, I didn't realize. So it's up for appeal, so that could be overturned.
Well, it can be, you know, but it's going to take a year or two. Meanwhile, I'm still a convicted felon right this today. Now, of course, you know, while it's under appeal, maybe I get some of my civil rights back. But unless you start getting into this game, you don't really realize what this is all about. I mean, it's really, in the end, it's all about special interests and the money.
Of course. And feeding the lawyers. I just multiplied 76. You said 76 a day?
Yeah, $76
a day.
Yep.
Okay. Now, I just multiplied that by 141. I wasn't sure how many days. I just said 141 days. That's $10,716.
Right. They're going to spend on a nonviolent, victimless crime.
I don't want to pay for your ass to be in jail. Not because I don't like it, because it's a waste. It's a waste of money. It's a waste of your trashing your rights, and it's a waste of money when, you know, in my humble yet all-knowing opinion, jail and prison, that's only for violent, hardened criminals. Everything else should be based on restitution.
Yeah. Yep. I'm agreeing with you.
Oh, I know. But I was rather shocked to see the stupidity in the – well, I shouldn't be shocked – to see the stupidity and the ignorance of so many American sheeple who kept – you should have seen – you probably didn't see the ring debate and so we had on Facebook with some of your friends who had, you know, made comments. And then you see people writing in like, you can't do the time, don't do the crime, or that's the law. The law's the law. They were so steadfast and ignorant of their rights. No wonder the country's in the mess it's in. It just yet, I mean, if this was 1776, they'd all been Tories. There'd have been no revolution.
Right, right. I saw this interesting quote. It said, "A society of sheep must beget a government of wolves." And that's what's going on here. Everybody is so passive here. Our government's just running over all of us.
It's getting worse. Now, we can't win with a violent revolution, obviously, but I went to the Gandhi thing. If millions of us refuse to cooperate, there's not enough prisons, although there's FEMA camps, but if a lot of us, you know, if millions of us stop paying our taxes and just stop cooperating, it would seem to me that would be a step in the right direction.
Yep. True.
You know, I just see us losing more liberties. They're causing more problems, more regulations. That's what another way they bring their Fabian socialism. Is they just continue to churn out more laws and regulations steadily so that you don't notice it. It's incrementally. And then when you do notice it, there's not much you can do about it.
Right, right. And really the big thing is here that people still aren't really necessarily realizing. It's the whole idea that if Judge Belvin Perry, Chief Judge Belvin Perry, can let this order stand, that means every courthouse in our state will start picking this up, and then nobody can hand out anything. I mean, the way his second administrative order is written, that now anybody can look any of this up online, and if you go to Mark Schmitter, S-C-H-M-I-D-T-E-R, on Facebook, I'll gladly send you the orders. So you can see it for yourself, so you know I'm not making this up. But in his administrative order 2011-07, it says anything that has to do with free speech, and it says it just like that, must be done in the free speech zone. Now, if you're walking into the courthouse and you're talking to somebody, that's actually free speech. So technically you're violating now a felony when you do that. Now, that's
great
reason they're not going to arrest them, and they do have to hand you the paper first. And they have to explain it a little, and then they can arrest you. And they kind of did that with me, but not really. Besides that, I didn't really feel the second administrative order had anything to do with me. I thought it had more to do with the Casey Anthony people that were holding signs and parading around and, you know, kill her, let her go free, and all that crazy stuff.
That's really a good point you had. If you're just two people are talking on the way into the courthouse, that's free speech.
Yeah, and matter of fact, where the area is right in front of the courthouse, where it's like a semicircle so you can pull in and drop off people, all those news trucks come in there, and they all have big numbers and their logos and everything on the sign. I mean, they would be violating free speech.
I would definitely bring that up. I would bring that into your appeal. Here I was under the impression that the whole country, or at least all public property, was subject to free speech and a free press.
Yeah, well, it isn't. And then the other thing is, I mean, what law says that the free speech zones, which are about 9 foot by 30 foot, why wouldn't, well, I mean, if you let that go, I mean, he can make him a mile by 5 miles, and then sure. he can make him so far away from the courthouse. There's no regulation on this thing. Well, first of all, because it's unconstitutional in the get-go. But here's the trade-off, the way it's explained to me, is everybody on the First Amendment of the United States has the right to redress the government on the courthouse steps, to petition right. the government.
Right.
Now, once they make it so you can't do that, well, then you can't get your message across. So they're really limiting or stopping your free speech by having a free speech zone. Now, the trade-off on that is, like with the Casey Anthony people, they can't, since they're holding signs and protesting and all that, they can't interfere with the flow of traffic. Now, I understand all that.
Sure.
But what Perry's doing is running with it to take everybody so they can't petition the government. Because the courthouse steps is like the town hall. It's like where everything happens legally is in the courthouse of that county, like where they auction off the houses. You know, everything happens there. So he destroys that.
I've just been sent a good quote here. I get emails from, I don't know if you're hip to the Future of Freedom Foundation.
No, the Freedom
The Future of Freedom Foundation.
Oh, I've heard of them, yeah.
And they're out of, I forget where they're out of, but they always have different titles, topics, like today has, I don't know, you heard about lemonade tyranny, these little kids with lemonade stands being shut down by cops.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All this kind of BS. You know, what's happening to Wall Street, and then you know who John Maynard Keynes was, right? That idiot economist
sure.
who
right.
was all... So some of the titles are Yo Keynes, the party's well and truly over. Drug war, hitting the cartels where it hurts, da-da-da-da-da. But at the top, there's usually a quote, and here's a quote I want to read from the great Ludwig von Mises that's very relevant to your situation. Okay, I'm going to read it to you now. Quote, "It is important to remember that government interference always means either violent action or the threat of such action. The funds that a government spends for whatever purposes are levied by taxation, and taxes are paid because the taxpayers are afraid of offering resistance to the tax gatherers. They know that any disobedience or resistance is hopeless. As long as this is the state of affairs, the government is able to collect the money that it wants to spend. Government is in the last resort the employment of armed men, of policemen, gendarmes, soldiers, prison guards, and the hangman. The essential feature of government is the enforcement of its decrees by beating, killing, and imprisoning. Those who are asking for more government interference are asking ultimately for more compulsion and less freedom." Quote, Ludwig von Mises, 1949.
Yeah. So what's the name of that association, the Freedom Association?
Future.
You got that?
FFF, email, Future Freedom Association. I'm going to forward it to you right now.
Okay.
So you can see it's a great quote, and, you know, these idiotic judges, you know, I mean, that guy's a would-be dictator in my book, you know. They don't care about human liberty. They just care about enforcing the law. Now, we're a nation of laws. It's a republic. But as Frank Zappa said, it's a nation of, you know, poorly written laws and badly enforced. You know, there's a lot of bad laws out there that shouldn't even exist. And that complicates it, because then they mix in bad laws with good laws. You know, you shouldn't go 70 miles an hour in a parking lot. I get that, you know. But I don't get restricting people's free speech.
But talk about that. You're right. You shouldn't go 70 miles an hour in a parking lot. And also, you shouldn't be in a theater and yell the word fire.
Right.
Right. But everybody agrees with that. But what our government tries to do is put a speed limit sign in the parking lot that says 3 miles an hour maximum speed limit. And then they go ahead and they get you a ticket for speeding, when really what they should be doing if you're going 70 miles an hour or even, you know, 35 or 40 miles an hour and there's people around, well, then they should just get you for having reckless driving. But once they put a speed limit sign in, then they can run with it, because it could be 2 o'clock in the morning and you want to go faster than 3 miles an hour. See, there's where the problem runs into.
But I thought yours, your case is more than a speed limit. Yours is pretty much a stop sign, that bastard.
Well, it's even worse than that by him changing the administrative orders from a misdemeanor to a felony. It's like he's changing the rules in the middle of the game.
Right.
Because I actually did contemplate that maybe he'll just run with this sucker, and then I would go in court and I'd be convicted of a misdemeanor. And I said, oh, well, you know, I'll take the bullet for liberty. You know, I'll do a day or two in jail for a misdemeanor. But I never, ever, ever thought that he would just put this draconian type of thing in for 150 days. And by the way, 151 days is $11,000 of taxpayers' money.
Wow. Yeah. What a way. Like, you know.
I know.
It's just, you know. Well, you know how outraged we are, and I hate to see what's happening. I mean, I know there's an Arab Spring. It's time for one in this country, but Americans are very sheepish and, you know, frightened and you know, what's the word? Flighty, and not flighty, but they're just, you know, they confuse patriotism with loyalty to the government, and the government just sees it more and more and more. I'm a TSA. You know, it's just our rights are just being shredded and people just, you know, accept it. And then their idiotic attitudes to people like you who stick up for our liberties and our freedoms is, well, if you do the crime, you got to do the time. But the law is the law. You know, if you don't like it, change the law. And I said, yeah, change the law. How much is that going to cost to hire more lawyers to undo what the other lawyers have done? You know, I really clashed with this one lawyer really well, and I nailed him, you know. And he started calling me names. So when he started calling me names, I realized that I won.
Yeah. Yep, that's right. That's exactly right.
He's a vet. He says, I took an oath, too. He said, I take oaths seriously. Yeah. Well, what about your first one to the Constitution, you know? So,
yeah. And the judge even brought that up. You know, it was so strange. Is right when he sends me, before he sends me, he even told me, like, well, you know, Mr. Schmitter, you know, I've seen you a number of times out there, and you've never really bothered me. You know, the way he was talking, he was going to let me off real light. And then he nailed me with this stuff. You know, he was talking real nice, and then he put the whammy on me. He says, well, you've never talked disgracefully to me or anything else, which I made a point of not doing. Some of the other patriots kind of did.
The judge said that? Judge said that?
Huh?
The judge said that?
Yeah, the judge said that I always treated him with respect and everything else. And then he also said that if I wanted to change the law, I've got to go up to where the laws are made and get them changed there. Now, everybody in the world knows that's just plain an impossibility. That's all there is to it.
Change what law? That was a decree.
Well, I know it's a decree, but when it comes to, like, instructing the judges, about you can't vote your conscience and vija, you can only vote what information the courts give them. You know, that's the thing that he's saying I could go up there and get changed. Now, that hasn't always been in effect. What happened is back in, I think, the 20s and 30s, maybe the 40s, I'm not sure of what decade, that the corporations went in there to the judicial system, mostly the states, to where they instructed the judges to instruct the jury with what information. And the judges a century ago used to tell them about jury nullification, that it's a right for them to, right for the jury to nullify a law if they don't agree with the law. But that all changed now. See, it's gone the other way. Kind of
interesting. Yeah, that's really a shame. As I understand it, jury nullification was even used prior to the Civil War when jurors refused to convict those who helped run away slaves, and during Prohibition, when jurors refused to prosecute or condemn or convict those who were guilty of transportation or sale of alcohol.
That's exactly right. As a matter of fact, with nullification now, it could be jury nullification, when they had Prohibition for 12 years, New York, the state of New York, basically nullified that whole law. They wouldn't bring anybody to trial for it. That was one of the few states that did that, I found out.
In what year was this?
This would be during Prohibition. The state of New York nullified the federal law against Prohibition.
Wow.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I wish I would have learned jury nullification. I wish I would have learned about it in high school.
About a year ago. I never knew it even existed, but it was one of those things where my country's going to hell, and I just wanted to do something somewhere, some crusade, to help to just say I did something so I can sleep better at night, that I'm doing something to save the country. And jury nullification, to me, is one of the biggest deals that I've ever found. I mean, it's just fantastic, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, you're right. And, again, you're not just doing it for you. You're doing it for the cause, the whole, you know, the whole deal, the whole concept of what lies ahead and, you know, what it has to do for all of us. And we should all be very informed of this. It should be the damn law that these damn judges have to inform jurors. In fact, in every courtroom, a juror should be given the type of flyer that you handed out, that it should be written into our Constitution and our laws. And again, you know, saying that we don't intend this for, you know, to mindlessly let murderers, arsonists, rapists, armed robbers. No, that's a different situation. That is not a victimless crime laws.
Right. Correct.
Although the drug laws cause a lot of crime, theft, murder, all this sort of stuff. They cause this sort of thing. But so now, when is your next court date?
Well, I won't have any court date at all until we figure out what happens with these appeals. You know, I'm just in limbo. But I have to file the appeal now within about, I have to do it within about 30 days now. So it's important for us to find the money. You know, we got to get $1,500 just to get to my lawyer to get this thing, moving. He'll let me slide on some of the money, but in the end, I mean, he's just like anybody else. He's got to make his mortgage payment, so what the hell?
Yeah, how is this lawyer? I mean, is he genuinely on your side? Does he support fully informed juries?
Well, one of the things I really like, his name is Adam Sudbury, A-D-A-M-S-U-D-B-U-R-Y. And anything that's local, he would be more than happy to go out and give a little lecture on, you know, the First Amendment rights. Because to him, he handles family practice, but he's also done 17 different appeals. And to win an appeal is really unusual. You only win maybe 4% of them, but he's won two of them. But he enjoys a First Amendment challenge. Because basically, it's not to be redundant, it's the backbone of the country is the First Amendment. So it's really important,
right,
for him, if anything else, just to go after this thing. And also, he's giving us a considerable discount, because the prices I was getting for a lawyer was $5,000, another one was $3,500, and Adam Sudbury was $2,500. So he was the best price, and he was also recommended, and he was very enthusiastic about this.
Wow. Yeah, well, that's good. And send me an email after this as to where I can send another donation, because I'm going to be out of town for a while, and I'd like to donate a little more for your cause, cause. Your cause is our cause.
Right. And the way it sits right now, I'm getting together with a company that does these types of things. They facilitate these 501c3 type of deals to where they get contributions and they take care of the paperwork. and they take a small fee on everything, but then they organize it and put the website and do all that stuff. So, because I would just get swamped with paperwork and not know what I'm doing.
Obviously, I would love to see this go to the Supreme Court and the notoriety that it would bring and the sunlight it would bring to this issue about fully informed juries. And that would be great if people like you and other activists could hand out their flyers throughout the country, knowing that they cannot be messed with by the feds or by the state.
Well, and that's really what it comes down to. And let me use another example here. My my son out in San Francisco, his fiance got a red light ticket in Napa Valley, and it was $575. Now, wow. With jury nullification, if she felt like contesting this, and I tell everybody to contest everything, because if you don't start contesting this stuff, then they'll just keep making more and more laws because the government knows they can get away with it, and red light tickets are a good example. So if she contested it and I knew about jury nullification, well, I would say, yep, she did the crime, but the penalty doesn't fit the crime because you're also allowed to do that with jury nullification. You get to ahead of time, you got to do it, though. You get to go up to the judge and say, okay, if we find this defendant guilty, what would be his penalty? Because if she would come up in front of me and I would go in and say, okay, if it was $50, I might convict her as being guilty. But or maybe court fees, maybe. But $570 is just too much money for running a red light. And then she loaned her car to somebody. It wasn't even her in the car, but she's the one that's got to pay it.
Oh, because they ran the light.
Yep, it was in her car.
I think we touched on this last time we spoke, and I also mentioned that these bastards in local government, as I understand it, and I've noticed this, and I've always said, you know, these damn yellow lights, these yellow lights should be longer. They're too short. Well, apparently a lot of local governments and their greed for revenue, taxes, more financing their mismanagement, they have shortened the time of yellow lights. When longer yellow lights would be safer and better.
Right. Right.
That's something I'd like the public to know about.
Shorten the time, then they make more money.
That's something I'd like the public to really be made aware of. You know, there'd be another deal about that going on. Like, hey, we don't like these short yellow lights. What the hell is this all about?
Right.
Yep. You know? But thank goodness nowadays for the internet and alternative radio and media because, I mean, you know, now you can spread the news a lot quicker. Before, you know, they had more of a lock on us with just, you know, the three major networks and, you know, your telephone. That's what you have.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, now it's instant communication throughout the world, you know. You can send somebody in India an email immediately. They know what's going on.
Yep. Hey, I always, like you and I, enjoy quotes because they come from our founding fathers and people.
Sure.
Here's one from Teddy Roosevelt. You ready for this one?
Yes, but I'm not a fan.
It says, it's abbreviated from, this is from a speech he gave. It's called the Man in the Arena speech, and he gave it somewhere over in Europe because he was the first president really to start going around to other parts of the world. Okay, here it is. The man who really counts in the world is the doer, not the mere critic, of the man who actually does the work. Not the mere critic, the man who actually does work, even if roughly and imperfectly, not the man who talks or writes about how it ought to be done. So, in other words, for us to make a change here, everybody's got to get in the arena to make a change.
Right. Something like another quote I've heard something about. It's one thing to stick up for one's principles. It's one thing to stick up for one's principles, but another thing to live them, or something like that. You know, it's one thing to say it, but it's another thing to, you know, do the talk, do the walk, sort of a thing.
Yeah, it's another thing to sacrifice for them. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
That's cheap.
Those who ask to collect sacrifices, usually politicians, presidents, and leaders, those who ask, this was pointed out to be a female mentor friend of mine, those who ask for us to make sacrifices, they are usually the ones that collect the sacrifices.
Yep.
Sounds like something Ayn yeah. Rand would say.
Yeah. Yeah, it's
you know,
done
that. You know, so, well, anyway, I sure appreciate you coming back on Third Stream View and letting us know what's happening with your situation there. And, again, you've got my support, moral support, financial support, and intellectual support, because someone's got to do it. We got to keep fighting this damn battle against the state, against statism.
Right.
And I appreciate it, and I always kept saying when I was doing this battle on this on Facebook against these idiots who didn't have any sympathy for you, you know, I always said this is a 6-year honorably discharged veteran who fought for our, you know, our rights and our free speech, and that, sad to say, it didn't make much difference to these idiots.
No, no, you know, it really doesn't. Interesting enough, it's even though I'm a member of the BFA. BFW, excuse me, down here, it's a few of them really understand the reason we're in the service, and but the other ones are just complacent. You know, it's amazing, even though I visualize myself as somebody that didn't have to fight in a foreign war, I was in the Army Reserve for 6 years. But again, I do not fight with a weapon. Well, I do not fight with a gun. My weapon is a piece of paper.
Right. But you still, you serve, I guess not during wartime, whatever, but you still served honorably. So, I mean, to me, it's the same thing. You deserve, you know, all the respect just as the others. You would have done what you had to do had you needed to. And that's why what pissed me off about reading a lot of these idiots when I was debating them, they had no sympathy for you. These would be the same people that would otherwise say, we got to support our troops.
Yep.
You know?
That's right.
So with that, Mark Schmitter, I'm going to thank you again for coming on the Third Stream View. Please keep up the struggle for our rights. Fight the power. Keep being the good person that you are. And I thank you again for your struggle and all you've done.
Yeah, great. Great.
And with that, I'm going to sign off, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to sign off and say thanks again for listening in to Third Stream View. Please dial in again next week, same time, same place at bbsradio.com, 8:55 Pacific Time, 10:55 Central, and 11:55 Eastern Standard Time. Until next time, good night for now. See you later, everybody.